Hello and welcome everyone to, I truly feel this is going to be the most special or specialist episode ever of MTG Potpourri.
Call.
Right next to me, and he's nodding vigorously. He can barely stay in his seat, is Conley Bonerjanfields.
I think that this will be a something show.
Special.
Yeah, I think you can insert adjectives that would fit there.
Well, if we pull up thesaurus.com, they should be able to give us some other ways of truly saying how special this is.
Oh, I would love to do this. I'll do this while you pass the mic over to our other co-host.
Okay, the also incredibly special, and I heard... Oh, okay, well, I'll actually be able to share with you a word that means one with shapely buttocks, but I'm going to let Adam go first.
See, when I was growing up, everyone, my teachers, my principal, my friends at school, my mom, everyone told me how special I was. I even had a special bus to go to school on. And so I know what special is. And this podcast is special.
I imagine you'd be like Richie Rich. You went to school in your own like yellow stretch bus limo.
I've done us the service of pulling up some synonyms for special. They include regular, indefinite, ordinary, insignificant, standard, unsuitable, unnoteworthy, unimportant, commonplace, improper, familiar. There's a lot of synonyms for it.
Red letter. I like that one. We need to build up your confidence. Conley, you are part of this show, and
Conley, I'm not an English major by background, not a literature major by background, but I'm pretty sure that list of words you just shared are what we call antonyms. The opposite of what it is. I think synonyms would be words that you can that would be equivalent to that you can replace it with.
There's a possibility, but I pulled it up on thesaurus.com, so I mean it's probably pretty legit, I think.
Something. Yeah, he went to school.
So well, I mean everything on the internet is legit. So. That makes sense. Okay.
Yeah, Abraham Lincoln said that.
Evolution, okay. I don't know. Could be real.
Anyway, I think this is gonna be a special episode because we're gonna have a goddamn awesome announcement.
Yeah, should we just do it right now?
No, you got to listen to the whole episode, or you got to like move the bar slider and like figure it out.
Not good at it.
Yeah, you got to bait and tease. Come on, what are you? You would be the worst woman ever. If you were a woman, you would get nothing cool your whole life.
Now, I would have been pregnant at probably the age of
somebody would buy you 12. A drink, and you would immediately sleep with them. It'd be the worst ever.
I'd be really popular, though.
I take exception to those analogies, Conley.
It was a terrible analogy, I know.
was it bad, but it's also kind of inappropriate. I would just say Tom's just terrible at marketing. Like you know, you lead strong, but then you hold back. You make him wait for it. Like clearly Tom has never gone to one of those buy a timeshare things where it's like you get a free vacation, come to Florida, and then you got to realize you've got to sit through 12 hours of being sold a timeshare before you're allowed to go to Disney World.
Okay, I've never done that. That sounds like a terrible idea.
It is. Also, it's awful.
I'm really good at customer service, though. I don't know much about marketing, but customer service, I'm all over that.
It's because you're a veterinarian. I know.
All about making those animals happy. They all go home with a smile and a wag of the tail. It's guaranteed. All right, guys. It was kind of unfortunate timing last week that we recorded Thursday night, talked about the spoiler that we had so far for Journey into Nyx, and then literally like 6 hours later, it felt like the entire spoiler was out. So I was kind of laughing at that. But Conley and I were chatting a little bit before the start of the show. We mentioned a lot about just in general, it seems like the power level of Journey into the Nyx, which I still hate saying that name, but Journey into the Nyx.
Journey into Nyx.
Okay, it just doesn't sound right when I say it that way. That is the correct name of the set. It just doesn't roll off the tongue very well.
What would the Nyx be? Like, what is the Nyx?
So I think I'm thinking of like Stevie Nyx or something.
You're journeying that. Okay,
I want Stevie Nyx on a boat on the River Styx.
Ooh,
like there should be a four
with the band like Styx playing in the background.
Absolutely.
This is an interesting concept.
I'm there. If you wizards, I know you're listening. If you need that kind of extra special fourth set or extra set that you do every year, Stevie Nicks on a boat with Styx, journeying down the River Styx.
I know we're just used to this low budget podcast stuff, but maybe we should consider going to big budget movies, Tom.
Oh, I've got so many ideas for like B horror movies.
No, big budget, Tom.
Big budget horror movies.
B does not stand for big.
B for big budget.
No, that's not what it stands for.
So the movie that I have, and I've sadly actually kind of worked on a script
back,
for
go
this.
Back to the magics.
It's called Thunderhooves. It's about a killer horse. And you know what the tag? You know, like the little tagline on the bottom of the poster would be.
What would it be, Tom?
Terror has a new name. So it'd be like name like a horse.
Thank you for explaining your joke.
Oh, I can't even tell a bit about
after the onomatopoeia that came before it. We would have never arrived at.
In case we have some urban players that maybe have never met a horse or watched TV or a movie or listened to the radio, you know, the Amish players. Well, I guess they would have horses.
Before Adam tells you that some horses are going to take objection to your joke, can we please go back to discussing magic?
Yeah, okay, well, we'll do a little bit about Journey into Nyx.
There you go. Good boy.
I'm going to write it down on my screen. We now have the full spoiler, so we're not going to do a full set review. There's lots of places to go there. But were there any cards that came out that, I mean, you guys are especially excited from a constructed or even maybe more fun, a limited format? And then Adam or Conley, you know, why don't you guys stop fist bumping each other?
Gross. Well, I mean, I can talk about limited a little bit. One of the things that I noticed in the set, like, so leading up in Theros, we get introduced to Bestow, and it was kind of like, basic, a little more expensive, you know, the best ones like were 4 mana to bestow. And then we get to Journey in the Nyx and we get, you know, much more aggressive bestow costs, smaller guys. It felt like it was, there was more bestow kind of around, like building the Voltron dude was a really cool thing. And so I was really expecting in Journey into Nyx, we're going to the land of the freaking enchantment creatures. And there's like no bestow. Like, I just feel like it's just, you know, poof, it's not there. Like, I was really expecting a lot of bestow guys. And, you know, that's the one thing that kind of really threw me. And it feels like they're kind of shifting the format slightly. Like it's going to be just a little bit harder to build those indestructible Voltrons, the you know, just massive guys that even if you kill it, they're left with like two or three more creatures on the battlefield anyway, and they can just keep pounding in on you. Yeah, that's the one thing that kind of really jumped out at me right away I don't know what you have any thoughts around that, Connie, but it just doesn't feel quite the same as like what I was expecting.
I will say it doesn't feel the same as it did, but I really wasn't expecting anything, so I can't say that it feels different than I was expecting. I will say it is certainly the format will certainly change pace quite a bit, but I don't necessarily view that as a bad thing. I just view that as a thing. Being a professional Magic player, you kind of get used to formats changing, things getting banned last minute, things getting released last minute that change. Like, they're basically just the hurdles. So I kind of viewing this from a kind of a spikes perspective, all it does is really change what the format is, which is kind of exciting because. Born of the Gods didn't really do that. Born of the Gods was very much the same thing that Theros was, but just maybe a little bit weaker. But you still had the same big monstrous creatures, big bestow creatures, and then small heroic dudes with weird powers. But I actually liked that this set kind of more shoving heroic down your face by having this drive mechanic, which obviously synergizes very well with it. Having a different set of heroic creatures, including like reasonable aggressive ones in both blue and black as well. There's a two-drop heroic.
Yeah, and then
there's two drop heroic creature in black that steals counters effectively, and then there's a 1/3 flyer.
Yeah.
Then there's a 1/3 flyer for 3 mana in blue that's like arguably better than Wingsteed Rider, some would say. So like both those things are really interesting. I do think the format will be faster as a result of this set being out, but like I said, I don't necessarily view that as being a bad thing, just a little different. The bestow creatures that are in the set are quite powerful for whatever that's worth. There's the bad things on their dudes, but good things on your dudes kind of cycle, if you want to look at it that way. The like target creature gets this and can't block, target creature gets this and must attack. And they're kind of interesting to play with. So that cycle's obviously uncommon, but.
And I do want to give a special flavor award. There's one card, especially in red, that I think, I don't think is really very playable, but just seems perfect for, you know, supposedly the history, the legend behind the myth behind the set is Bearer of the Heavens. It's a 10-10 in red. It's a 7 in a red. It's a giant. It says, when Bearer of the Heavens dies, destroy all permanents at the beginning of the next end step, which flavorly just seems perfect. He dies, the heavens fall down, everything's toast.
Yep, and for anyone that does not know, maybe Tom does not know, the obvious combo here is Rescue from the Underworld, which you sacrifice Bearer of the Heavens to it. It dies, and then you go to your end step, everything else dies, then you go to the beginning of the next turn, or I guess the beginning of the next upkeep, and both the 10-10 and whatever other creature you targeted come back, and the sit and play is the only two permanents, so it's pretty sweet.
Cool, yeah, and so people are rescuing the rules from Theros. and how they describe what it did. And it's an instant, which is pretty slick.
Yep.
Okay, limited. Big Daddy wants to know more. Tell me more.
What more do you want to know? What Adam said is certainly true. The format is, I think, a little bit faster now, but it also has a little bit more directions you can go. Constellation as a mechanic is heavily linear. What linear means, it's kind of a designer term a little bit.
Paper means it's a straight line, but...
Well, yes, that's it. But you're basically taking that and abstracting it to what cards would be. So a straight line means you're doing one thing. You're being very constant. So when you think of what an example of a linear mechanic would be something like Affinity, which very much promotes a single thing. You play with artifacts, and that's your reward. You get
so promotes like a specific deck archetype.
Yeah, tribal decks are generally considered linear. Like if I were to print a bunch of elves, and then I printed a card that said that was a 1/1 elf, and that said tap, gain one life for each elf you control, it would be very obvious where that card were to go because it fits in a very very obvious role in a very linear strategy, which is elves. Now, a mechanic like heroic, maybe. No, like basically any mechanic that kind of is generic cycling, I guess. Any mechanic that you don't necessarily go, well, in order to maximize this mechanic, I just play more of this mechanic. Like when you play with affinity creatures, you naturally play with more affinity creatures because they kind of work towards each other. When you play with goblin lords, you naturally play with more goblin lords because they work with each other. When you play with a cycling deck or a bestow deck or even an evolve deck, these are not cards that necessarily need to be played with other things from their cycle to be effective. So they're considered non-linear strategies. These cards tend to exist in isolation. Like when you see a card like Arcbound Ravager, you don't see it in non-affinity decks. It does one role and it does it very well. Whereas you look at a card like Vendilion Click or whatever, that kind of goes all over the place because it's a very broad card that does a lot of different things and does not get pinned down into kind of filling in a very specific role. So we would consider that non-linear. So the constellation mechanic is what I'm specifically referring to. It is extremely linear in that when you have this mechanic, you want to draft more enchantments. That's your goal. Draft as many enchantments as possible. Draft as many cards with constellation as possible, and you have a pretty good deck. It almost doesn't matter what the constellation effects are, because if you stack enough of them up over time, you're going to win. Of course, if they're like, target creature can't block, you don't have any creatures or whatever, you're going to have a problem. But most of the time, if you just draft a ton of constellation and a ton of enchantments, you're going to have a pretty reasonable deck. Things like Mana Curve, et cetera, need to be taken into account. You still are playing a game of limited, but that is kind of a new deck that really didn't exist before. There was not a lot of incentive to just draft as many enchantments as you could. There was actually kind of a disincentive because so many people had a ton of like enchantment removal cards sitting in their sideboard waiting to come in and prey on you. But now it's like, well, I have 15 enchantments in my deck. A bunch of them say Constellation. I'm getting all kinds of free value. And you don't have 15 removal spells in your sideboard, so I'm just going to overload them, and I have a pretty sweet deck. So that's kind of like the new big deck, I think, that'll be seen.
Okay, so just kind of Constellation, heavy enchantments, and just jam it all in there.
Yeah. I mean, like I said, there are going to be some specific Constellation decks that will be more popular. Like, people will figure out specific synergies and whatnot that work better. I haven't actually gone through and looked at those yet, but I'm just saying some sort of Constellation-based deck will be popular.
Go ahead, Adam. It sounds like you had something to...
No, I was just going to say that pending Sam's article, because this is what I asked Sam Stoddard, one of the developers in R&D, about Journey to Nexus, is that it seems like there isn't, like, for one pack with Constellation, I feel like Constellation is a much smaller effect on Limited. Like, I just don't see, like, drafting a deck around Constellation, per se. Like, I feel
the reason it works is because the keyword itself doesn't need to be picked that often to be effective. If I have 3 Constellation cards in my deck, but 10 enchantments, my Constellation triggers are significantly more impactful than if I had 3 Constellation cards with only 3 or 4 enchantments. So the reason that they skew the way you draft is because you get them in your first pack, so you know exactly how many Constellation cards you have coming out of pack 1. If you have enough to make a run at an enchantment deck, you now have the incentive to take enchantments higher, which fundamentally changes the pointing of cards that you already had an established point to for your head. You're going to be taking, random grizzly transformations or whatever over cards that you thought you would have taken over it before just because you have 3 or 4 Constellation cards waiting in your pack. Now, I agree that you don't necessarily just take all these Constellation cards going, I'm going to be an enchantment deck. maybe you want to do that. Maybe some people will do that. But I think just over time, you just look down at your packs. You're like, wow, I already have three Constellation cards, and it's 11th pick of pack one. There's an option for a fourth one here on color. Let me just take that one. Now I have four Constellation cards. All of a sudden, I can actually build a Constellation deck. So it's not so much about just picking up as many Constellation cards as you want. It's just about starting off with Constellation cards and now knowing that enchantments have a higher value.
Okay, I guess we're kind of saying the same thing, because like I'm looking at Constellation as just kind of extra fuel for existing archetypes. Like if you're trying to draft Bestow monsters, you know, you want to get the if you're putting the Bestow guys really high and you want to make sure that you get as many of those as possible. Obviously, any Constellation cards that fit in there are just going to be good, because whether you're casting as a creature or an enchantment, you're getting a bonus. The same with the value of all of the Inspired token makers. They all make enchantment creatures, and because of the wording of Constellation, only cares that it's an enchantment entering the battlefield, not that you're casting it. Suddenly the value of those guys goes up. I know there's one that that has haste and makes 3/1 haste guys, and like I feel like being able to quickly get a couple enchantments out after you get a Constellation guy down, like, you know, and it feels like it makes the strategies more redundant. Like, it doesn't really bring anything new.
It actually might make Godfavor General a little bit better while you're on those guys. He was, I think, probably the worst, or most people consider him the worst, of those enchantment token makers, because he's so small and he's very difficult to get in there with him. And then even when he does connect, he puts 1/1s into play, and you're like, well, these 1/1s don't really do anything. But the fact that he triggers Constellation twice is kind of interesting, at least.
All right, you guys ready for a really dark and creepy flavor thing that is in Journey into Nyx?
Probably not.
I was kind of surprised. To be honest, I'm literally surprised they put this in the art on one of the cards. Is the card I'm looking at is it's an uncommon. It's Deserter's Quarters.
Okay, wait. Hey, what's the name of it?
The Deserter's Quarters. It's the artifact.
Hey, Don't say what you're.
Oh, I was just going to say what the card does before I realize it.
Okay, go ahead.
It's kind of cool. So basically, the card itself is, it says two colorless. You can choose not to untap it. Six untap, you can tap on a target creature and keep it tapped if you want to. But if you look at the art for Deserter's Quarters, it looks like there's sort of two warriors wearing red kilts, and there's like a golden bronze-looking, I guess, steer, and they're apparently shoving a guy through a door, and there's a fire beneath it. And actually, this is historical. This is apparently was invented in ancient Greece. There's a torture device called a brazen bull. And I'll tell you what it does, and it is literally what's in this picture. It was created by, let's see, the brazen bull, the bronze bull, or the Sicilian bull. It was a torture and execution device designed in ancient Greece by Paralos of Athens, who proposed it to Phalaris, a tyrant in Sicily. The bull was made entirely of bronze, was hollow, and had a door in one side. The condemned were locked in the bowl, and a fire was set under it, heating the metal until the person roasted to death. Pretty sure that's what they have in the art of this card.
That is exactly what's happening in this card.
So I thought that was fairly...
The only thing I don't get is the flavor here, and it kind of throws me off, because it's like, it's the creature tap, but like, yeah, over time, like, it should like give them -1/-1 every turn or something.
Yeah, or like, yeah, after three turns, they are, you get like a cinder token, or just, you know, a 0/1 charcoal token, something like that, and be like, yep, they roasted to death. Now I get something out of it.
That's a good eye, Tom. All right.
Yeah, well, I'll put the Wikipedia link in our, obviously be in the show notes for you guys. I will also throw it in the little chat window just to show that I'm not lying. But I think it was some random like crack article about crazy torture devices of history, and this is one of them. That's the reason I'm like, that looks scarily familiar. So kudos to Wizards for going down the dark side of the putting a torture device in the art of your card.
I don't remember what Adam and I were talking about, but it was probably really important, and you took us away from that for bull.
Just bull. So I was just kind of curious it feels like one of the first times really since Kamigawa block that they, and if you want to go back to like Arabian Nights, where they really picked a set theme that actually has a real world potential basis to the history of it. And
there's some of that in Innistrad a little bit, just because like people believe some of that stuff to be true.
Yeah, like because we've talked about the ravenous Lucrocrota, which was based off of a real mythical animal. Just a lot of interesting stuff. That was just maybe one of the more dark ones I've seen in quite a while. Do you guys, I mean, in general, as Magic, we've talked a little bit before in previous episodes about how Magic is, you know, it's growing year after year. I don't think anybody really thought it would still be around and this huge at this point. We're getting movies, comic books, whatnot. I mean, do you feel there's going to be eventually this push to be more PG or almost even G rated? That's why I was a little surprised to see a little bit of the darker flavor of the last few Magic sets or even blocks. I feel like if you compare like the darkness level of, say, you know, Fallen Empires, you know, go up to like Innistrad Black where you got vampires and all this other stuff, it seems like it's gotten a little bit more serious in that respect. Am I totally up? I mean, you guys get a similar feeling?
I was letting Adam say anything you want to say first.
You're talking about the overall like feeling of like the stories that they're trying to tell in the sets.
Yeah, as in my mind, it's like they went from being kind of more PG kind of teen horror to now we're in sort of full on adult horror. I mean, if say it was like I'm teaching my 5-year old to play Magic, you know, pick whatever random age of your kid. If they put in front of them a bunch of like Fallen Empires and Homelands, I guess I wouldn't have any concerns. Now on some of these newer sets, I mean, we have a card where a dude is being roasted to death in a bronze ox. I mean, I might be off base. It just feels like in general, the flavor of Magic has become a little more, maybe adult focused, a little bit more serious, real world. I was just kind of curious.
I think it's just a function of kind of the maturity is not the right word, but it's kind of in the right general direction. Like, you know, Magic's been around 20 years. That's basically a generation, right? So like, you know, the kids that were born when Magic was created, you know, some of them have kids of their own now that are being born, you know? So in terms of what the game can do and how the game is engaging with players, with consumers, with pop culture, you know, I think it's evolved. You know, back when Magic was created, it was, you know, I think the context of high fantasy and the expectations for the way people would perceive things are different. You know, now that we've gone through multiple blockbuster high fantasy movies, you know, we took The Hobbit and we stretched it out until there was nothing left to stretch, and then we took it two movies further. Game of Thrones is you know the
first she goes down on his wing, you know, and then she goes down on his wing.
You know, it's just the expectation of, you know, a fantasy environment is that I think now it can tell you, you know, very very rich, very grisly stories. You know, not everything in Harry Potter. You know, a kid's book, for example, there's a lot of death.
especially after like 5 and on,
and it grappled with very real things. I mean, obviously geared towards, a PG-13 audience, but, you know, young adult. But I think it's just, you know, that culturally the expectation is different. I think people expect more complex stories. I think they expect realism. Like, you know, you said that was a real thing, roasting people in an ox. Well, guess where they're drawing inspiration from? Cards.
Torture.
You know, I'm pretty sure it was not, you know, not a coincidence that this card that's depicting a, you know, a very visceral way of killing someone happened to be drawn from the very real ways we used to do it. I mean, I think that's just where we are now in terms of our expectations of games. I mean, just across the board. I mean, I don't even want to get into it, but like, you know, consider like, you know, the Mass Effect series and what BioWare has done with, you know, role-playing storytelling, just the immersive environments that's expected there. You know, it's just, you know, people build these entire worlds and pack as much information into it. And that's the new baseline.
Okay. And I guess I'm not trying to say that's necessarily bad or wrong. I just, as somebody who's been around Magic now since, you know, kind of beta unlimited time, it just kind of stepped right me in the face as I was reading these cards and looking at them like, wow, just the art and everything else just seems a little more adult. And that's
Tom, why do you hate Magic so much?
I like Magic. I was just kind of...
I don't believe you just hate it so much.
When you spend, you know, like 20, 30 minutes of your day watching, you know, Sophia the First, who's learning to become a princess, it does sort of change your view on like media and art. You're just like, wow. Also, you watch something else, you're like, damn, that is dark, dude.
No, I agree. But remember, when Magic first came out, it was criticized for having a card with a pentagram.
Oh, God, yeah. Like, at school, they got all up in arms.
Yeah, I'm just saying that, like, Magic's kind of always had this, like, it's just the fantasy realm that has these things exist. And when Magic's borrowing from tropes that exist, like Greek fantasy or horror fantasy like Innistrad, like, there's going to be some, like, creepy, weird stuff going on. But I think they do it in fairly flavorful ways, so it's not like so removed from being a piece of artwork that you can't go appreciate it for what it is. It's not like they're not trying to shock and awe you. They're trying to like be like, yeah, this is a thing that exists in this fantasy world, and we pulled it off pretty well. Like, the bull thing, you know, we're kind of nitpicking about it not killing the creature or whatever, but, like, it's very, you know, reasonable flavor in terms of a top-down of roasting a guy alive, I guess. So, like, I can understand why they would use that trope. So, you know, I'm totally for them realizing that the audience is not all young children, because it is not, realizing that even when their audience is young children, they tend to be a little bit more intelligent of young children. So, like, they're able to, like, wrap their heads around kind of bigger ideas and the bigger picture of, like, yeah, this is Greek mythology and these things happened, or, you know. So I think that, in general, they've done it in a classy enough way that I don't think there'll be much gripe about it. I think that the you know, things like the sexist Garrick versus Liliana card, I'm trying to remember the name, Triumph of Ferocity, I think.
Oh, basically, like, that type of, like, stuff. Yes. Subjugating her in the
picture. Like, that kind of stuff is much more dangerous than, you know, a reasonable, creepy kind of depiction of something that, you know, was effectively real.
Yeah, I do feel they potentially had a little bit of a miss on the flavor text. The flavor text on the actual card is, in Akros, the penalty for running from battle is one night stay in the deserter's quarters. I would have potentially recommended this quote from Phalaris. He was the tyrant who's hearing about this. So Perilous, the guy that created his quote, is, and this is in the brackets, his screams will come to you through the pipes as the tenderest, most pathetic, and most melodious of bellowings. Apparently, so, Perilous was a creepy ass guy.
Out of curiosity, in that little article you read about the bull thing, were people always killed in that, or was there a chance that they were just tortured for a while then let out?
It says in general that they usually died. But, and
okay,
we have to give a little bit of credit to Phalaris. He was the tyrant. When he heard just how creepy Perilous and how excited he apparently was about his torture bowl, Phalaris, the tyrant, immediately made Perilous test it out. So basically threw him in the bowl to see how it worked.
All right.
Perilous did not survive this test.
So it was a successful demonstration.
It worked. That's one of the times you're like, shit.
Phalaris immediately ordered 500 units.
Okay, guys, that worked phenomenal. This is like the awesome blossom of torture devices. We need tons of these things. And some of those fire starter logs that people are going
to
use.
Who refers to good things as the awesome blossom of something?
Why is the awesome blossom?
Why is that your baseline for, like, this is a good, like, people will, you know, that's a dime or whatever. That
awesome blossoms are, they're terrible for you, but they are probably one of the tastiest things that man has ever created. I'm not saying that it's good food or good for you.
Literally, all they are at this point is just a bag of salt dropped on top of an onion.
Yes. If you could see how vigorously I'm nodding yes, it's like, okay. If you could just take an awesome, if you could awesome blossom an awesome blossom, where you take the onion, you blossom it, and then you refry it again.
I'm going to try to turn you off of the awesome blossom in a different way. Imagine I pooped salt. I could just stand over onions pooping on them all day long, just take a big old dumps on them, and those would be awesome blossoms.
Is it deep fried?
Yes.
Is there a batter around this then? I mean, realize it's poo.
The salt forms a natural batter. So then it's all that batter is just salt.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. I'm with you still. You could even cook an awesome blossom in a brazen bowl, as far as I understand with this. So instead of putting people
with the dude inside of it?
Well, no, I'd leave the person out. I would just fill it with awesome blossoms and turn it on.
I don't think you would get your desired consistency for your awesome blossom.
No, that smell is glorious. Did you guys clean it out first? Oh, God.
Apparently, the meeting place is going to be at Applebee's.
Yes. All right. Well, before we go to our big announcement, do you guys have any kind of last thoughts or, you know, I don't know, new deck types you're excited about that maybe were brought to you from Journey into Nyx?
Not really that I can talk about too much, just because the Block Pro Tour is about 3 weeks away, 4 weeks away. And a lot of the synergies that are things that I would like to talk about are potentially things that are going to be seen in Block. And while most of them are going to be known and explored by the good players, there's a chance that it won't. So have to keep that kind of stuff on the down low.
Just because of how short of a time it is from set release to the actual event.
Yeah, basically any information is huge just because it's such a short turnaround. And because normally when a new set comes out, it affects the format almost none. Like the last Pro Tour was, you know, modern, so a new set coming out changed very little. Where when this new set coming out is in block, that's a third of the format is brand new. So it's a pretty big deal to kind of stay hush hush. So I don't want to talk too much about things.
Okay, so I kind of expected that, Conley. So follow up question, and you can probably withhold, you know, maybe share a little bit more. But given that Minneapolis is modern and we're about 2 weeks out, is there anything in the set that kind of stands out as maybe having some modern potential, or maybe something that we, you know, you wouldn't be surprised maybe to see show up that weekend?
I don't know how many of the new cards are going to be like Dictator Crucifix is a card that we'll probably see play in the Howling Mine decks. If anyone's seen these, they basically take infinite turns using Howling Mines and Time Walk effects until they eventually kill you with the Planeswalker. Like Dictator Crucifix is potentially a card that would see play there because it is a Howling Mine that you get the first card of. It also provides devotion for yourself, things of that nature. Dacra Mystic, the 1/1 merfolk that looks at the top card and you can either mill or draw it. That's a card that might potentially see play either in merfolk shells or in potentially some combo shells as a sort of filterer. It works really well with cards like Counterbalance. So it's an interesting card to think about. I don't think there's like any like one card that like builds an entire new archetype, but I think there's a lot of little small additions that people will be trying out mostly in modern, and then over time that there'll be cards that get heavily adopted. But I think right now people are mostly going to stick to the modern cards they're used to. Maybe they'll switch over. Like there's the Rule of Law 1/4 for 3 mana. So it costs the same as Rule of Law, but maybe if you want it to be on a body, you play the Eidolon of Rhetoric is his name. So maybe you play that guy instead of Rule of Law. Maybe you play the 2/1 for a colorless and a white, which is his name. I'll find you. Where are you?
I've heard both of those cards.
I don't actually see it. Aegis of the Gods. That's his name. 2/1, colorless and a white. You have Hexproof. Maybe people play this over something like Leyline of Sanctity. Like, this is a really neat card that will probably see some amount of play at the Grand Prix. I'd be surprised if it doesn't see some, but I don't know how much. I don't know if it's good enough to get Hate Bears as a deck, because it's certainly a strong Hate Bear. So there's a lot of like little cards like that. The new O-Ring might see play. Brain Maggot will 100% see play. That guy will probably see play in Pod, which is one of the better decks. So if Pod does not get banned, expect to see something like that. So the set will be relatively impactful in terms of the number of cards that see play from it, but in terms of like creating a brand new archetype, the only one of those that can really come out of the set would be a Constellation Enchantress style deck, which people have definitely been speculating about. There's a lot of ways to draw cards off enchantments in Modern, especially with the new 4-mana green card. So look for that to potentially be a deck, but outside of that, it's mostly going to be little upgrades for decks here and there.
Okay. So talking about Grand Prix Minneapolis, segue
back. Did we want to do reader email first?
You are the pralines of my ice cream, Adam Staborski. Let me pull up
the emails here. I don't know what that means.
Pralines, that just means Tom wants to hold me in his mouth and
pralines are awesome. That's why I'm confused.
100% wrong.
Pralines, why can't you pick like a legitimately everybody agrees this thing's a bad thing? Like, why can't you say you are the urine in my ice cream? Everybody goes, we agree, that's bad. Pralines?
There's plenty of people that think pralines are. Gar says, if he were an ice cream flavor, he'd be pralines and dick. I would assume that means pralines are bad. So we have two emails this week.
No, it doesn't. That's the dick is the bad part. The pralines are just what come in your ice cream. He was just using that to make it an ice cream reference.
I think the listeners
are going to come to my head. I'd like to remind you, gentlemen, that there are plenty of people that don't think the dick is the worst thing possible to have in your mouth.
Well, sure, of course. But I'm just saying the pralines are not the thing.
In this example. This is Wayne's World. This is not highbrow.
Well, it wasn't really a Wayne's World. I didn't even get the reference because you twisted it into something it wasn't.
Yeah, so whatever. I don't like pralines.
I won the day aside debate last time.
No, we had some feedback.
Aaron Forsythe, the director of R&D, says it is pronounced day aside, and that is the game we are talking about, and therefore I am correct, and we're going to find out about this one, and I'm also going to be correct. You're just going down, Tom.
All right, so let's get through these emails.
Adam is dying. Okay, the first is actually from a fellow author on Gathering Magic. I hope I pronounce it right. First name is Ant, last name is Tessitore. I hope that's pronounced correctly. Just says, subject email is thanks. He just finished moaning up on the last two podcasts. Seriously, really enjoy listening to you guys. Thank you for all the laughs. So that's largely why we talk, why we do this show.
You're welcome.
Yes. And
I'm just kidding.
I hate everybody, but I do love Braylins.
Let Adam read an email. You guys need to get on this thing where you rotate back and forth on emails.
All right.
Yeah, so yeah, you get the long one from Eric.
It's not that long, but this is from Eric.
Whoa.
Hey guys.
Eric put a lot of effort in his email. I give him the credit he truly deserves.
Hey guys.
And his email address is Eric.
Let him read me the damn email, Tom.
Hey guys, I look forward to your show every week. It is a welcome distraction on my drive to and from my thoroughly crappy job where I need every little thing to get me through the day. Your podcast is as entertaining as Tom's segues are terrible. I'm not joking. He comes up with some pretty terrible transitions. I would recommend consulting some kind of segue expert as soon as humanly possible. My question to you guys is, if you had to pick a keyword mechanic to describe yourself, what would it be?
Oh my! Is there a list of all the keyword mechanics that you can search? I guess for me, is tribal? That's not a keyword though. That was a type.
Tribal is a type. Yeah.
Okay. Yes. I'm looking at a Wikipedia page that lists all the different potential keywords, and there is a lot.
There is a lot.
I maybe morbid. I could maybe take morbid.
that sounds. Terrifying for a veterinarian to have morbid. Like, I'm sorry your dog died, but I'm stronger for it.
But we could turn it into a diamond if you want, you know, or make a little print of its paw.
It's probably true.
Which I actually offer you.
I don't know what I would be. This is tough.
How about I like unleash for you, Conley? That
I don't even know what that means. What does that mean?
You're just unleashing it, you know.
I'm unleashing what? What am I doing? I'm zipping my pants? What are you talking about?
Depends on the environment.
Unleash is way too generic.
If you're talking about keywords that would be bad euphemisms for sex, I think split second probably is the worst one you could get labeled with. Or scavenge. I think that would also be bad.
What about fateful hour on split second?
That's pretty good. proliferate may be good or bad depending on
all right, we've gone on a completely different subject. Adam, do you have any keywords that you would like to
I'm a living weapon. I like living weapon for Adam.
I kind of like living weapon too. I think, you know, I like to think that there's like a little like germ inside of me actually pulling all the strings, and I'm just like a giant, you know, bulky weapon for him.
Or infect, that'd also be a bad sex one.
I definitely don't have infect, I know that.
How about horsemanship?
Horsemanship. It's off the wall, but it's basically just flying. I like it. It just sounds different.
That's actually could be bad.
It's a really good one.
Oh,
I know, this is like some like deep metaphysical question here.
I guess I could do changeling. That's these kind of tribal potentially keywords. Changeling for tribal.
Yeah. That's a good one.
Yeah, and I would like I thought of changeling for myself because it's kind of like I wear a lot of different hats and I've done a lot of different things over the past couple of years. So I feel like I mimic a lot of different stuff.
Bands with others.
Is there a mechanic that
bands with others? There we go. That's my mechanic. Bands with others.
Can you be bands with other camels? Is there a mechanic that blows up lands exclusively? I don't think there is, right?
No, because I mean Annihilator is permanence.
Yeah. Maybe it's Annihilator for me. I'd really like to blow up lands all day long, though, if that's cool with you guys.
You sure? Yeah, go for it. I'm so sorry. Still thinking you were just unleashing is everything.
There's more to Eric's email.
Oh, okay.
Go ahead.
That was a great
continue
question.
Continue on, Eric.
He had a second question. My second question, which in true MTG Potpourri fashion is completely off topic, is what do you think of men carrying pepper spray / mace for self-defense?
I would say mace is okay.
Do whatever you want.
I mean, but pepper spray, I'd say, is probably not super effective. So I'd say...
Well, sure.
Carry mace.
I assume that this question is being asked based on the implications of what it would look like, not its effectiveness.
Like self-defense.
Because it included both of these. Yeah, like he was not he's not asking which one of these things are more effective, I do not think.
Oh, okay.
I think he's implying that these things would be frowned upon because they tend to be a display of weakness.
Okay.
No, a display of weakness, I think, is what you would say, that you need pepper spray on you as a defense. But, I mean, that's all BS. Basically, do whatever you need to do to feel good about yourself. And if you feel safe, carry around pepper spray or mace. Then do what you gotta do. Half the time you do that stuff, it's so you feel better about yourself and you feel more confident. You generally don't even need to ever use it. I mean,
so if you're a guy that carries, we'll say either it could either be pepper spray or mace, what would your keyword be?
What? I don't even know that.
Mine would be pepper spray because it would have to be the third unset.
I think it should be fear. Involved. I think fear would be the keyword for the man that's carrying the pepper spray and mace.
I don't know. That's you're just literally enhancing the stereotype that I'm trying to break right now. I'm literally trying to say it does not make you afraid to carry around pepper spray. It just means that you feel more
battle cry. Like, how about that? You have to yell out when you.
All right, there you go. You can do a
cry. Battle cry. Okay, there we go. So battle cry.
All I'm saying, Tom, is would you rather people walk around with pepper spray in their pocket or a gun?
Pepper spray is
absolutely. Exactly. So if you feel comfortable and you feel safe with pepper spray in your pocket and you don't without it, by all means, rock that shizzy.
Mm-hmm. Do what makes you feel good and it's legal.
Yes, exactly. And it's legal is important.
So to finish up Eric's email, keep phoning it up, guys. Eric.
Well, we just boned it up plenty. Don't worry. There's plenty of boning it up there in your email.
We reached the threshold of boning it up on that email.
That's what she said.
Boom. Oh, and he says, P.S. And this might be a good time to mention our email address. He initially sent it to mtgpopery@gmail.com. We are mtgpopery@gatheringmagic.com. But somehow this got to us. I don't know how that happened, but.
Probably redirect.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Adam.
Or he sent it and got the feedback that, hey, you sent it to nobody, and then he sent it to the correct one or something.
Oh, okay. Because I mean, we love emails. As you can tell, I love reading emails. I love making Conley make Adam read emails. It's all good.
Adam wants to read emails. I was just trying to coordinate you guys because you always like read like six in a row, and Adam's like trying to get one in, and then he's like, I'll get the last one, I guess.
So the keyword for this podcast, guys, is join forces. I mean, that's kind of what we're all about with this.
I don't know. Is that even a keyword? That's not a keyword.
Oh, it's an ability word.
It's an ability word.
Whatever the hell difference. I don't care. It's in the magic card box. So morbid was, I guess I couldn't use morbid. That was also a ability word. I apologize.
Hey, Tom.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You want to know the kind of super secret shortcut to know the difference between ability words and keywords?
Sure, because I honestly didn't know there were things as ability.
So keywords are all rules that are written right into the game. They are an actual ability. They are an ability a creature can gain. Like you can say, you know, creatures can gain infect. They can gain indestructible, things like that. Ability words are basically just flavor text. It's just a way of saying, hey, we're giving this common ability that you're going to see a couple different iterations of, but you're going to see a lot of them in this set. We're giving them this nickname to help you remember that. So like Constellation, we're giving you this nickname to remember that this card cares about when enchantments come into play. And we're giving Battle Cry.
A good way to think about this functionally, because I think Adam's described it really well, is basically if I say, it's a 3/3 creature for 3 mana and it has flying. Can you tell me what that card does? Of course you can. If I say it's a 3/3 for 3 mana and it has Constellation, can you tell me what that card does? Okay. No, you can't. There's information that's left off. Keywords completely contain the rules within them, and ability words need things to specify how to kind of play them out.
Like variables in there or something that might be different between one card.
Well, there could be variables within a keyword. For example, Bloodthirst 3 and Bloodthirst
cycle.
1.
Cycle has... You know, it could be different cycle costs and things like that. So that's true.
Cycle's kind of a weird one, sure. But like Bloodthirst is like Bloodthirst 1 and Bloodthirst 3, both of those are still keywords with a modifier where the number sets it so you can still modify things. But Bloodthirst still means, you know, if somebody dealt damage, put whatever, blah, blah, blah.
Okay. Since our podcast, I guess we're talking about keywords, not ability words. I say our podcast has soul bond. There were three dudes bonding on the air. Soul bond. You can't tell Eric, this was, I loved your email. This was a great question. Cause I knew there's a lot of keywords. I really didn't know how many until looking at this list.
Sure. I guess I'll go with soul bond. Only if Adam's willing to go with soul bond, I'll go with soul bond. Otherwise,
I have to veto. Guys, Conley and I have our hands in the, you know, that little pile in the middle.
No. I'm reluctant. I'm waiting to hear on Adam. If Adam says no, I'm pulling my hand right back out.
Okay, my hand's in.
I just want to be 100%. What am I agreeing to or disagreeing to?
I'm just saying if we had to pick a keyword to describe our podcast, I was initially had said join forces, which is an ability word, so shame on Tom. So I was picking an actual keyword, and that was soul bond, because I feel like we guys are bonding.
I'm not going to go in on soul bond, because soul bond is only between two. You can only soul bond between creature A and creature B. There's three of us.
Snap. Damn. He gets me with the rules.
I would not be opposed to ban, because being ridiculous, nobody understands it, but we all clearly have it.
I'll buy that. So banding.
There is a mechanic that requires you attack with three creatures.
Hideaway? Oh no, that's a specific example. Never mind.
No, not Hideaway. This is literally just in Ravnica, right about like a year ago.
But battalion's a.
I guess it is. You're right.
An ability word.
Ability word.
I mean, I'm fine with keeping ability words in the mix. I think in the sense of these are things that, you know, abilities of things in Magic, I'm fine with an ability word. So, like, we could do join forces, but I actually kind of like battalion more if we're going to allow ability words.
I don't know. I'll back out. I'm down for whatever. I think we've just successfully answered the email.
Okay. Regardless. Battalion does fit well. Yeah. I completely agree with Adam, because it is basically three or more, and that is
Potpourri Battalion.
Potpourri
Battalion.
If potpourri were to be a keyword, what in your guys' minds would that do? So if I
get submissions.
Yeah, so here we go. If we want more emails, it's mtgpotpourri@gatheringmagic.com. We are creating a new keyword. Should we limit to keyword, guys, or are we going to allow ability word uses for
this? It could be ability or keyword, either one. Ability words count, and it just has to be called potpourri. No other modifiers in the name. It has to be potpourri dash
something. Text. Okay, yeah. There we go. So tell it, what do you think, what would potpourri do? And I'm morbidly curious to hear what people come up with on this one.
What would potpourri do?
What doesn't it do, guys? Really? Come check out my new website, potpourrisforeveryone.net. All right, guys. Because .net is really the worst. What do you call the end part?
All right, let's get to the part of the show that all the people need to know things about and are now dead asleep as a result.
Okay, there's two things. One, I mentioned at the beginning of the show that there's a word that means one with shapely buttocks, as calipigian. Means one with shapely buttocks.
Calipigian?
Yeah, calipigian. Calipygian, I believe is how you spell it.
Calipigian. Okay.
Yeah, calipigian. And two, and for the few of you that made it to the end of this, is we are having a get-together for, I would say, any Magic family, especially if you listen to this show. Maybe you read Conley, you read Adam's other articles, or you follow other things in Gathering Magic. We want to get people together to have a good time during the Grand Prix Minneapolis. We are still finalizing the location, but we have nailed down the time and the date.
So just to be clear, if you are a cop listening to this show, when Tom says we're trying to get people together to have a good time and we've nailed it down, he's not referring to an orgy. Everything that happens will be clothed and legal.
Well,
thank you.
Orgies are legal if you're all consenting adults. How is an orgy illegal?
Look. That's fair. Where we're going to get together is going to be a public venue open to anyone from the public. However you choose to show up,
whatever
legal ramifications may happen because of that are on you. But mind you, this is going to be a public gathering for people that are just going to be hanging
out. The door has been opened. The door is open. Somebody's showing up in a Barney costume.
If you show up in a Columbo coat, I am out of there so fast.
Somebody's showing up in a Barney costume.
Orgy days never existed, and if they had, they would have been long gone.
So here's the deal. So Tom's going to be looking at a bunch of places. We're going to try to find a place that can accommodate all of us. You know, it's just show up, hang out, buy whatever you want to buy, eat what you want to eat, drink what you want to drink. You know, it's all on you. But it's just, you know, to try to get people together just to hang out and have fun. So we need your help to understand how many people that really means at Grand Prix Minneapolis. So go to the Gathering Magic Facebook page, like it, go to the event. There will be a, you know, MTG Potpourri party. That's right. You can come to the Potpourri party at Grand Prix Minneapolis. Yeah, that is a
phenomenal name.
Tell me you're going to come to that. You know, tell Tom, tell Conley. If you don't do Facebook, just send an email to mtgpotpourri@gatheringmagic.com. Let us know that you're really planning to be there. And if you're going to bring your significant other or all your magic buddies or just however many bodies are going to show up and hang out. And we'll do our very best to make sure we have a space that can accommodate everyone.
Yeah, so, definitely let us know as far out as possible. Obviously, people are going to know at different times whether they're going or not. But it's just best for us to have a head count because the difference between 40 people showing up and 10 people showing up is vastly, you know, more different depending on what kind of spaces we need, what kind of entertainment we need, what kind of food we need, things like that.
I mean, this is downtown Minneapolis on Saturday night, so we really need to know if you're going to come. So go to the Gathering Magic Facebook page, shine for the event, or send us an email at mtgpotpourri@gatheringmagic.com.
And for planning purposes, this is going to be Saturday night. That is May 10th, Saturday. And the meeting time at whichever location gets picked is 10 p.m. And
also, if you have any recommendations for places in Minneapolis for meeting, feel free to drop those too. Tom's going to be looking some up. But if you're like, hey, Tom, that place sucks, the one you picked. I've been there multiple times. Here's a place that's really awesome. Feel free to let us know because if you let us know early enough, we can possibly make changes.
Yeah, and so what I'll do is maybe if you're looking to submit ideas, obviously emails are great, but also to send it to us at our Twitter, MTG Potpourri. That would be great too, then other people can see what's being recommended and you can, you know, get all your beef on about which place sucks, which place is awesome, and we will eventually make a pick. We'll say, well, should we give a timeline? Hopefully within the next week we'll pick a place.
Yeah, hopefully. Hopefully the next time we cast, we will be able to announce where it's at.
Perfect. On there.
So
we did get one recommendation, actually. This is from, I think, roughly about a week ago from Brosif Stalin on Twitter. This is a great. That's what it says. Brosif Stalin. We have MTG.
I'm surprised he got that name.
Yeah, that's pretty cool, actually. But that's not the app name. That's like the one that you can set.
Oh, okay.
But I guess this is also a pretty decent ad. It's at Jake Bellerin. That's a pretty good one. I suppose it's Jake Bellerin. It says a great Minneapolis GP meetup would be at the 1029 bar for a karaoke Saturday night. As we kind of talk about the show, karaoke probably wouldn't be great necessarily for a get together, just because you want to be able to talk and communicate.
Karaoke is kind of a we already know each other type of deal. I mean, it's fine. I wouldn't be completely opposed to it, but Tom's a terrible singer, as we all know. So,
yeah, we did have a couple of requests for people to have me sing on this podcast. Sure. So that'd be something too. I mean, you can pick any of the Princess Sophia songs. If you have a young one and you watch YouTube, the Learning Station has a bunch of great like kid songs. Boom Chicka Boom. Again, I know we talked about this the last one. That one's still really, really addicting. Yeah. Or any Barney song too. I could probably pull off the top of my head. And the podcast is dead. Yeah.
Yes. Tied when you start tree. Talking about Barney songs, what do you expect?
I don't know. I think adults can like Barney or at least tolerate it. I don't mind it.
No. Yeah. Adam agrees. He would agree with you.
I heard there's much worse.
He would verbally agree with you, but he's hanging from a noose right now.
You just hear the creaking swing and the chair tip over. All right, guys.
We've hit the end.
We have. Take us out, Adam. You get to do the finish. You get to finish it.
So just to recap, Grand Prix Minneapolis.
Mortal Kombat, MTG finish it.
Can you let me finish? Grand Prix Minneapolis, MTG Potpourri Party, place to be determined. Go to the Gathering Magic Facebook page, sign up for the event, or send us an email at mtgpotpourri@gatheringmagic.com. Let us know you're going to be there. We'll get all the details out there so you know. This has been MTG Potpourri. I'm Adam Stiborski, the_Stibs, STYBS on Twitter. Tom?
I am at PSG Reader, and I have basically, if you want to email me, to send to the mtgpotpourri@gatheringmagic.com.
Would you like to address the hacking that occurred on your Twitter account last night?
Yeah, I have no idea. And then it just magically stopped. It was like, it's either that or I was like sleep tweeting that I really like.
Tom's infected with the heart bleed, everybody. Don't interact with Tom.
Watch out for the heart bleed. Has nothing to do with heartworms. It's about internet stuff.
All right. I'll trust you. But if you try to sell me a TV again,
it's such a good deal, though, guys. Truly.
Yeah, it was like $84 for like a 48-inch sharp TV. I'm like, all right, this makes sense. Yeah,
it didn't say flat panel. I'm not lying to you. I left out that's one of those enormous 300-pound tube TVs that you need a crane to lift.
Yeah, it's one of those special crack panel TVs.
I just imagine like the entire.
All right, who are we on in terms of announcing where they could be found?
You.
I don't remember who left off.
It's you.
Me? All right. It's always me. You can find me at Conley81, I was going to literally say AT for the at symbol. The at symbol, CONLEY81. And then, I was about to spell, that's why I was in the spelling mood. In addition, trust me, it's a mood.
You and your mood, too.
In addition, you can read my articles and watch my videos on channelfireball.com, articles on tcgplayer.com. Next week, I'm doing the full set review for Journey into Nyx. So if you're interested in those cards for either limited or constructed, you can check out a breakdown of every single card Monday through Thursday next week.
Or TCG Player, the
day you're listening to this. Yeah, TCGPlayer.com.
Okay, just because then you write for different places so people know where to find it. It's cool that you're doing limited and constructed.
It's limited and constructed, but with a heavy emphasis towards standard. If a card is only good in like legacy or vintage, I generally call it out. But I'm actually doing breaking down the limited even further this time. I normally give a limited rating in general, but this time I'm going to be doing a draft rating and a sealed rating just so people can kind of get an idea of what cards change between those two contexts. And maybe while I'm not going to necessarily explicitly say why every single card is drastically different, maybe they can start picking up on like, okay, you know, these types of removal spells are better in draft than they are in sealed. And here's the general reason why. So hopefully it'll help people out.
Okay. Sounds great. Again, thank you guys. It was fun. Our short podcast round to be actually kind of long, which is cool. Two thumbs up.
She should.
It'd be awesome, but yes. But in general, though, to wrap up, it would be awesome to see as many people as possible on that Saturday, Minneapolis, fully clothed in a bar, just to kind of get to meet people out there. As there is such a wide range of people that play Magic now, it's kind of cool to see that. I can't say anything around you. You're like that dirty older brother. Like when you first learned that a male chicken is called a cow.
You literally clarified our meeting with fully clothed in a bar again, as if you were honestly concerned that somebody would show up as not one of those things.
Yes, I was, because I also know that the Magic player base is very diverse.
All right, fair enough.
For all humans, we're all capable of just terrible depravity. So I want it to be a clean, fairly PG. All right. Again, it has always been fun. Thank you, Conley. Adam.
What?
I was saying thank you for an incredibly special
episode. Okay.
I also, since we talked about
incredibly special,
and I think is that we've used the term limited far too long that I think we should use one of the synonyms. I personally like hampered or circumscribed. So instead of saying I'm going to go play some limited, I'm going to go play some hampered or play some circumscribed. Any traction there, or do you think limited sums it up pretty well?
I think limited sums it up pretty well, Tom.
Okay, good. Just want to just
run by. You have a limited number of cards to work with. I don't think most people say they have a hampered number of cards to work with.
Sounds kind of cool.
Or the number of cards they're working with is hampered. Should we call it tailored?
Tailored, circumscribed. I think confined is pretty good. Curbed.
These are all terrible, Tom. Limited. Just keep it limited.
Thank you. I want to stop now before Adam physically hurts me when I meet him in Minneapolis. Have a good night.